You enjoying the book of Ruth? I think I've had a number of conversations in the last week with people who are saying they've really enjoyed the book. I wonder, have you read the last page yet? Have you resisted that temptation to go to the last page and how does the story end? What happens at the end? How is this all going to pan out? Because if you haven't, it's one of those stories where it's almost as if we're kept in suspense along the way. How is this going to work out? And week by week, we see things happening and things falling into place, questions answered. But there are still plenty of questions for us. Let me very briefly recount where we've come. You remember at the very beginning of the book, the scene was set, a very difficult time in the nation of Israel, the time of the judges, a very dark time. People were doing whatever they thought was right. There was a famine in the land, and a very ordinary family, Elimelech, Naomi, and two sons, left the land, left Israel, left Bethlehem, and they went to a different land, to a land of Moab, looking for food, looking to save their family, but ended up with the tragedy of death. Death of the father, Elimelech, death of the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and the tragic news that Naomi was left without future, without sons, without husband, without family, without hope, it would seem. And yet, we heard a couple of weeks ago how she made the decision to go back home, went back home to Bethlehem with her Moabite daughter-in-law, that's who Ruth is, in tow. Went back home, and in chapter 2, as we read this morning, one morning Ruth goes out to glean, which basically meant to go and look to see if anyone would leave some leftover grain as the harvesters went through. It was the Israel's equivalent of Centrelink, how they could provide food for those who were destitute and poor. And Ruth, we are told, found favour in the eyes of this man, Boaz, the man of courage, the man of strength, the man who cared for this outsider. And what we find today, not just does he care for her, not just does he look after her as an outsider, he is abundantly generous to this woman, Ruth, and by inference to her mother-in-law, to Naomi. And the reason we can see immediately that there's a sense of the abundant provision is that when is this whole chapter set? It's set in harvest time. And we know from the very beginning of the book that the foundations of the book was a famine. And so we've gone from famine in chapter 1 to the abundance of harvest time in chapter 2. And not just the provision of harvest time, but in chapter 2, verse 14, it's meal time. It is lunchtime. And that's the scene of the second half of the book, which we're looking at today. So you read in 2, verse 14, at meal time. It was lunchtime, time for a break from the work. Boaz said to her, that is to Ruth, come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar. So you got the scene. You pictured the scene. The harvesters are working in the field. The boss man has turned up. Boaz has come and check on his harvest. It's lunchtime. Everyone takes a break for lunch, and Boaz, the generous boss, perhaps has brought lunch for the workers. In our context, the barbecue's fired up, the steaks are put on, the snags are cooking, and there is lunch for all the workers. And he looks at this young girl, Ruth, the one that he'd met, the outsider, remember the Moabite test, the one who didn't quite fit in, and maybe he sees her sitting discreetly to the side, sitting away from the harvesters, sitting there, if she had any lunch of her own, eating what she had brought. And he says, don't sit by yourself. Don't have lunch there on your own. Come and join us. Come and join, have lunch with us. Come and eat with my harvesters. It was in their culture, and still is today in ours, I think meals were a place of fellowship, a place to share community and relationships, and it was a place where he is basically inviting her, come and join us, come and be part of us, don't sit off to the side, come even though you're a foreigner, an outsider, even though you're a gleaner. Come and sit with the harvesters. Come and sit with my people, my family perhaps, my workers. Come and join us. That's the invitation of inclusion, isn't it? And as you read on in verse 14, when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain, and she ate all she wanted and had some left over. A couple of things. Boaz doesn't just welcome her, doesn't just include her, he is abundantly generous to her. You notice that? He piles up her plate, so to speak. She's got so much on her plate, she can't eat it all. There's some left over. In our terms, we would say she gets out a doggy bag and she takes some home, which we're going to see later on, she gives to her mother-in-law. Boaz is not just including her, he is abundantly generous to her as the outsider, and he serves her. Do you notice that? He serves her. He offers her some grain. He gives her a meal. The boss serves not just his workers. The boss serves the gleaners, the outsider, the foreigner who had come to his field. Now, here's the question for you. Who does that remind you of? Who does it remind you of that the boss, the master, the king, who comes not to be served, but to serve his people? It's an image we see throughout the Bible of people who give us an anticipation of Jesus. That is, what I'm saying here is the way that Boaz consistently treats Ruth in this passage continues to point us forward to the time 1,000 years later when Jesus would come. Jesus, who is our glorious Boaz, so one theologian has said. Let me explain. You see, if you read, listened as we read that passage in Ephesians, chapter 2, there is that reminder for every one of us that we are effectively, like Ruth, outsiders to God's people. Outsiders in the sense that we're not the people of Israel. We are Gentiles for a start, but more than that, we are outsiders because of sin. If you read Ephesians chapter 2, we are outsiders, our transgressions, our sin, the way that we were enemies, objects of God's wrath. We were all by nature outsiders to God's people. And the message of Ephesians 2, the message of the gospel, is that our glorious Boaz, Jesus, comes into our world, not for us to serve him, but for him to serve us by giving his life for us. That's the message of the gospel. Our glorious Boaz, who welcomes us as outsiders into his people, into his kingdom. Friends, maybe this is a good moment to help us understand this. When we read Old Testament passages, really two things go on as we read them. The first is what I've just explained. That is, we are given hints and clues and anticipations of Jesus. We are encouraged to look to where all of this will be fulfilled, where God will ultimately show his generosity. We are to see in Boaz the anticipation of Jesus. But at the same time, we are also to look at Boaz and say, well, here is Boaz, if I can put it this way, imitating Jesus. And the encouragement to us is to imitate Boaz as he imitates Jesus. The opportunity to imitate, especially for the men here, to imitate this man of courage and man of strength. We imitate Boaz in lots of ways. We are encouraged to imitate him as the giver of hospitality. The word hospitality literally means the one who loves strangers, the one who loves the outsider. We are to imitate his hospitality in showing hospitality to outsiders. We are to be, like Boaz, the courageous protector to the vulnerable. We're to imitate Boaz as the generous provider for the poor. In fact, let me put it this way. If I was to look for a book in the Bible in which I wanted to instruct young people in how they might imitate God's people in showing generosity and kindness, especially to outsiders and to foreigners and to people who are not God's people, which book in the Bible would you open up to have a look at that? And I would suggest that Ruth is a great place to do that. And so here we are. Boaz is both the one who is pointing us to Jesus, but Boaz is also the one that I think we are here called on to imitate as someone who loves and serves and protects outsiders. And folks, look what happens next. Have a look in verse 15. Look what happens next. She, that is Ruth, got up to glean, finishes lunch, decides to go back to work, and Boaz gave orders to his men. Okay, Boaz, we understand, is an older man. He's a man of means and wealth and has fields and workers for him. He's a slightly older man. But what's he going to do here? He is going to give instruction to the younger men. Okay, the older man is instructing the younger man. And what's he instructing them about? What's he going to teach them about? Well, the answer is, he's going to teach them about generosity and about providing and protecting and defending and looking after the outsider. He's going to teach them about being men of courage and strength. Look what he says. Even if Ruth gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Literally, don't humiliate her. These young men have seen what? They've seen how Boaz treats her. They've perhaps listened in on the conversations he's had with her. They've watched pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them, that is, deliberately leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her. That's incredible, isn't it? Isn't that an extraordinary thing to say? Here is Ruth, the gleaner. Remember what gleaning was? You followed after the harvest. So the harvesters who were gathering the grain were told, don't take every last grain, you know, leave some in the fields behind so that the person who can come and glean and collect up the leftovers. And Boaz says to his men, make sure there are lots of leftovers for her to collect. Deliberately take out some grain and leave it for her on the ground. He is, in other words, going above and beyond what the law required. And he's instructing and is imitating to his young men to do what he is doing. That is, show overwhelming, stunning, unheard of kindness and generosity. This is a good moment to pause and suggest that there is a great model for us here, isn't there? Those who are in the room who might be classified as older men, I think in our church that means if you're over the age of 30, you're probably older. There's an opportunity for us to both follow Jesus, imitate Jesus, and be consciously saying to younger men around us, I want to instruct you and help you to understand what it means to follow Jesus. Imitation and instruction. There's also an opportunity to say to the younger men, I think for our church that can be anything from children through teenagers up to people in perhaps their early 20s, is the invitation for you, put yourself under a Boaz. Put yourself in a situation where you can be instructed by an older man, where you can imitate someone and learn from example and instruction what it means to show hospitality and generosity and provision and protection. Let's read on in verse 17. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to an ephah. Friends, that is approximately 10 to 12 kilograms of grain. If you're picking up scraps after the harvest, that's a lot of gleaning. That is a lot. Just put it in the context for you. About an ephah would have been something like 2 weeks' wages for your average harvester. So she goes out to find some gleanings and she comes home with equivalent of 2 weeks' wages. That's a lot of food that is going to provide for our family for quite a long time, isn't it? And here we see this theme emerging in the book of Ruth that Boaz isn't just being generous. And he's not just being generous to God's people. And he's not just being generous to an outsider, he is being overwhelmingly generous to an outsider. And again, I want to start by saying, this points us towards Jesus, our glorious Boaz. We've already been reminded this morning that we, like Ruth, are outsiders. And just as Boaz overwhelmingly does for Ruth what she can't do for herself, that's what Jesus does for us. He does in a glorious, overwhelming, astonishing way what we cannot do for ourselves. Again, want to turn with me to that passage in Ephesians chapter 2. We'll have a look there. You might want to keep something in Ruth chapter 2 as well. So what we're told in Ephesians chapter 2 is that not just Jesus came into the world and loved and died for us as outsiders, but if you go down to verse 6, we start to get a picture of the enormous, astonishing generosity of our God to us. In verse 6, and God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus. That remarkable news that we did not deserve and we cannot do for ourselves, and yet Jesus has given us, by his incredible generosity, a place in his heaven. In his kingdom, a place that we will patiently wait for, when he returns, he will give us a new resurrected body and a place in his kingdom where we will live for eternity in his new creation where things will be perfect and there'll be no death and no pain and no dying and no sickness. He puts us there by his remarkable, astonishing generosity that we do not deserve and that we could not do for ourselves. Jesus is our glorious Boaz. He is the one who gives us generously, abundantly, more than we could possibly ask or imagine. But if I can take you back to Ruth 2 again, the scene kind of changes for us from the field. In verse 18, we're told she carried it back to town. That is, she literally says she loaded up. Yeah, you can imagine the scene. 12 kilos of barley in a sack, loads it onto her shoulder, heads back into town, back to Naomi's place. She hefted this heavy bag home to Naomi, who so far we've known as who? The kind of bitter, cranky mother-in-law. Okay, she heads back home to Naomi's house, and in verse 18, her mother-in-law saw how much she'd gathered. Personally, I can't imagine walking the door with a 12-kilo bag of grain on your shoulder, and I'm missing that, okay? She saw her walk in the door, 12 kilos of grain on her shoulder, and Ruth says, but wait, there's more. Have a look, verse 18, Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. That is to say, as if 2 weeks' wages is not enough, Ruth brings out the doggy bag and says to Naomi, here is the meal that I had left over at lunchtime. It's for you. Leftover barbecue. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Imagine Naomi. She must have been absolutely overwhelmed. What is this? I sent the girl out to glean and she comes home with 2 weeks' wages and a cooked meal. Not surprisingly, she has questions, wouldn't you? Lots of questions. This is the equivalent of saying the poor, destitute, homeless girl who has no correct visa goes out to try and earn some money and comes home with 2,000 of legally earned cash at the end of one day of work and some takeaway. And her mother-in-law says, I have lots of questions. If I can paraphrase, she says, where in the world did you go today? That's what she says, verse 19. She says, her mother-in-law asked us, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed in the man who took notice of you. And then Ruth replies. She told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is, the suspense is killing us, isn't it? Boaz. And Naomi rejoices. You notice that? The Lord bless him, Naomi says to her daughter-in-law. What a difference a day makes. Yeah? When she left home this morning, Naomi was poor and destitute and probably bitter. And Ruth comes home one day later in the evening, there's food on the table, and Naomi rejoices. She rejoices. And she says in verse 20, the Lord bless him. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. Who's the he? Boaz? Possibly. The Lord? He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. It's kind of ambiguous. And I think it's deliberately ambiguous because how has the Lord not stopped showing his kindness to Ruth and her family? Well, through Boaz. That's how the Lord has shown his kindness and generosity to Naomi. But in a sense, there's actually something more significant here, I think. There's something more significant because literally the word he has not stopped means to not abandon. And the word for kindness is the word for loving faithfulness. So if you read it that way, what we're told here is the Lord has not abandoned showing love and faithfulness to the living and the dead, by which I think she means herself and her husband and her sons, her family. I wonder if there was a day in Moab when her husband had died and her sons had died and she was poor and she was destitute and she was bitter and angry. I wonder if there was a day when she thought, the Lord has abandoned me. The Lord has abandoned his faithfulness to me. I wonder if there was ever a day when she thought that. I wonder if days of darkness for you, you have ever thought, the Lord has abandoned me. And yet here she is rejoicing in his abundant provision and saying, no, the Lord has not abandoned his loving faithfulness to me. It's a confession of faith, isn't it? The Lord is faithful when we are not. The Lord is abundantly generous even when we doubt him. And the hard lesson, this is the hard lesson that I think Naomi has had to learn, that the place of blessing in God's place with his people and his word and where he is, that's the place to run to where he will be faithful. Not away to Moab, not running away from God's people and away from his word and away from the place where he tells us to run to. She's had to learn that the hard way. But now she is back. She says, now the Lord bless him. He has not abandoned us. He has not abandoned his faithfulness. But friends, we're not quite done yet. We're not quite done because she added, that is Naomi added at the end of verse 20, just one little detail. That is, that man, Boaz, is our close relative. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers. Now, that is not a surprise to us, is it? We've known that since verse 1. If you look back in chapter 2, verse 1, we were told at the very beginning of the chapter that Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. We've known it for 20 verses. It's just that now, at the end of the day, at the end of an extraordinary day, Ruth and Naomi now come to understand that piece of news that we've already known. And we'll get there next week. But the mention that Boaz is her kinsman redeemer ought to spark all sorts of prospects that might come out of this in our minds. There was laws within Israel that if you were widowed, a woman who was left without a husband, children who were left without a father, it was a responsibility of kinsman redeemers, of close relatives, to marry the widow, to provide her with provision and protection and to defend her and her children. And so immediately the mention that Boaz is a kinsman redeemer raises that, well, I wonder where this is going. And the idea of marriage suddenly pops onto the horizon for us. And then Ruth replies in verse 21. Ruth, the Moabitess, you remember the outsider, the one who came from Moab, in case you'd forgotten, said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finished harvesting all my grain. And all the romantics in the room know what that means. That means they're going to see each other all summer long. Where is this going? It almost seems as if Naomi understands the role of the kinsman redeemer and the prospect of marriage, she keeps it to herself. She keeps it to herself, but in some senses it explains one final curious detail that I noticed this week. Just come with me a moment. Come with me back to verse 8 of chapter 2. Just look carefully. What does Boaz say to Ruth? She says, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Now, verse 9, what does he say to the men? Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after them. I've told the men not to touch you. But when you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. Just to remind you, he says, hang out with the girls. I've told the boys not to touch you. Okay, now, what does Ruth go and tell her mother-in-law in verse 21? Literally, she says, he said to me, in verse 21, stay with my men. The word workers there is the word for young men, until they've finished harvesting all my grain. That is not what Boaz said. Boaz said hang out with the girls. And Ruth comes back and says, he said I could hang out with his young men. And look what Naomi says in verse 22. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it would be good, perhaps better, for you, my daughter, to go with his girls. Get the picture? Come hang out with my girls, says Boaz. He said I could hang out with the guys. No, I think it'd be better if you hanged out with the girls, says Naomi. She's giving her some, if I can put it this way, wise advice. Let me tell you what I think's going on here. I think Ruth realizes her predicament. She's poor, she's destitute, possibly she's an outsider, possibly she doesn't think of herself as much of a catch. And she sees here an opportunity. This man, Boaz, has been generous. He's let me into his field to glean. He said I can hang out in his field with his workers. Maybe there, among his harvest workers, I can find a young man who would marry me. He said I can hang out with his guys. And Naomi basically says to her, no, don't just run after any man. Don't just run after the first person that shows any interest and kindness and affection and attention to you. Hang out with the girls, learn to be godly, and wait for a provider, a protector, a defender, a man of courage like Boaz. And in verse 23, we have the interesting little detail that Ruth stayed close to the servant girls, listen to her mother-in-law, of Moab to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. That is, she did not shack up with the first man that she met and run off and marry someone just because she was desperate. She lived at home. She stayed at home. And she listened to the wise counsel of this older woman. This older woman, Naomi, who, let's face it, wasn't always wise in her counsel. There was a time, not so many years ago, when perhaps she's learnt the hard way. She went off after what seemed expedient and what seemed to just work, what seemed right in her own eyes, and what mess did that get her into? And I think she has learned her lesson, and now she is wiser. And I wonder if she can see in the events that are playing out in this day that God is at work generously, abundantly providing for his people. And she gives her wise advice. No, don't run after the first man. Stay with the girls. And just wait. See, if that's right, then the thing about this passage is we have the older man Boaz giving counsel and instruction and modeling to the young men. And here we have the older woman who has learned from her mistakes, who is giving wise advice to the young woman. And so I say exactly the same as I said earlier. Here is the opportunity for the older women in our church, that is those who are maybe in their 30s or so on, to think of themselves as people who could give wise counsel to younger women, and for the younger women in the church to look for an opportunity to hang out with, to spend time with, to seek counsel from the older women in our church. Friends, God is abundantly generous. God is abundantly generous to his people. He's abundantly generous not just to his people, but to outsiders who come and seek salvation in him. And we've heard this morning that Jesus is our glorious Boaz. He is the place where we find, above all, God's glorious, abundant, and generous provision. And yet the thing, too, that we see as we read Ruth, as we read this story, we see so many ways that God is abundantly generous to his people. We see ways that God is generous to his people through his people. Through their generosity, through their welcome, through their inclusion of outsiders, through their hospitality, through their wisdom, their instruction, their counsel, through the generous provision that God makes for his people, through his people. Why don't you this week take the time, as a page in your books on Ruth to do this, to jot down a few things that you may think, yeah, that's how I should respond to God's word. That's an opportunity I have to model myself on Boaz, to be generous, to welcome the outsider. Or maybe there's opportunities to say, here's an opportunity I've been prompted to think of, or where I could seek wise counsel, or where I could seek someone to imitate. As they imitate Jesus, I seek to imitate them. What would it be for you? Think of an opportunity, perhaps today, to write something down, to share it with your small group. And let me now lead us in prayer for those things.